Welcome back. This is Hash Rate Up. My name is Jesse, and today I am speaking to Colin Kelly of Giga, Enterprise Account Manager at the company. We're talking about the containers and much more. It was a great, great conversation. I learned a lot. I used the wrong microphone for this one, so excuse me for that. The lighting on his side wasn't optimal, but the conversation, as I said, great. I hope you enjoy. Like, leave a follow, subscribe, all of that good stuff. You know how that works. Enjoy.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly, for joining me today to talk about mining containers and hardware. How are you doing?
Doing wonderful, Jesse. Thanks for having me on, man. I know we spoke in Vegas talking about getting to sit down to do a podcast. I tried to schedule one the Monday after Las Vegas, and you quickly followed up on Telegram and said, no way, not going to happen, man. So
I was very, very right to do that because I flew back for like 26 hours. And I was on a 16-hour flight from Atlanta to Cape Town and 9 hours of jet lag. And also, unlike you, I do drink alcohol. So, like we just said in the pre-discussion, right? It always seems to our better halves, it always seems like a holiday, but it's actually quite draining. And yeah, scheduling a recording where I need to be awake and look awake, most importantly. It's probably not the best idea straight after Vegas.
I'm glad you shot me down. Yeah.
Yeah. Ruin is always time. But yes, today is the 12th of June. We're recording this at block height 900.934. Let me just look at hash price briefly. That's not the right one. Hash price is sitting at 5350. And in Bitcoin terms, we are at, sitting at around 50,000 sats per petahash per day. So yeah, still getting there. I mean, the dollar number is important, especially if you buy important and expensive infrastructure in a very CapEx heavy industry, Colin. But before we get to speaking about boxes and switchgears and transformers, let's talk about you for a minute. How did you get started in this industry? What brought you to Bitcoin? And then please give the viewers and listeners a highlight on Giga Energy as well.
Sure. Happy to, man. Background in mechanical engineering, jump out of college, jump straight into the telecommunications engineering space. So I was doing a lot of fiber optic backbone cable designs to data centers, cell towers, commercial circuits. So I was in and out of these traditional data centers. So that's where I really cut my teeth on tech and got kind of immersed in that field. Like many of us, went down the Bitcoin rabbit hole in 2017, started buying Bitcoin, and quickly learned about the mining side of things and was completely fascinated. What do you mean I can plug in my computer and make money with electricity? This sounds awesome. How do I do this? So fast forward to 2018, I get my hands on an S9. I plug that bad boy into my garage, and immediately I remember looking down at the ASIC and saying, screw everything else. This is what I want to be working on. And so from there, it was a journey to how do I get into the Bitcoin mining full time. I spun up my own company called Bluebonnet Data. It's a spin on, I'm a Texas guy. The state flower of Texas is bluebonnets. They bloom every spring. So it's a little play on some Texas culture there. And just did some small projects, started doing some ASIC brokerage pretty early on, helping friends and family get involved in the space, started building a little bit of a personal brand on LinkedIn and marketing some ASICs and some other services there. And that's where Aaron Foster, head of business development from Luxor, and I connected. We had a couple of calls. He wanted to learn about what I was working on, and we became fast friends. Fast forward a couple of months, and he calls me up, and he's like, hey, Colin, we've got a job opening at Luxor. I think you're the guy for the job. Throw your resume in. I was like, okay, cool. So I was, you know, I was still working at my traditional engineering job then. And this was kind of my shot to get into the space full time. So, you know, things worked out great at Luxor. I accepted the position. I came on as a sales associate for the ASIC trading desk. And I remember talking to my wife being like, hey, babe, you know, it's my dream to work in the Bitcoin mining space full time. I've finally found kind of my path here. I'm thinking about leaving my engineering career. And she looked at me like, you're going to walk away from a cushy engineering job to go work in this Bitcoin mining space full time. Are you crazy? And I said, yes, I'm crazy. And she said, okay, I support you. So from there, it was off to the races, man. Jumped on board with Luxor. You know, the amazing team, great thought leaders. I learned a ton from Ethan Vera and Nick and Goose and all those guys, man. Had an amazing experience there and really rounded up on the ASIC trading. During my 2.5 years there, I did $150 million in hardware sales. Focus on enterprise accounts, institutional level trades, high volume, high frequency. It was an amazing experience. And that brings me to now I've transitioned over to Giga Energy. So my role here is enterprise account manager. I'm focused on our key accounts, high value deals and getting those across the finish line. So it's been an amazing transition. It's I got to focus on hardware at Luxor and really sharpened my skills there. Ask me anything about an ASIC, I can pretty much get you there. And I had an awesome time there. And now I'm doing at Giga Energy, it's kind of broadened my career scope. I'm doing everything from the high voltage substation down to the mobile data center box, with everything in between, pad mount transformers, any switchboards, that kind of thing. So it's been an amazing journey. I'm really happy to be here. That's Colin Kelly in a nutshell right there.
Nice. I can definitely attest to the peace and happiness it brings to run a business in the Bitcoin space, especially the Bitcoin mining space, because I feel like it's, you know, it's a high capex industry. There's a lot of money flowing around, so you know the chances of having financial success there is also there versus other parts of the Bitcoin industry, I think. Why, Colin, is it important to understand ASICs on a very deep level to then connect that knowledge to selling the infrastructure? Where do you think you have an edge because you understand ASICs so well?
Sure. Hardware is the moneymaker. You don't plug in the infrastructure and it starts making you money. You plug in the miner, the ASIC. So understanding that and how these machines operate, what they're sensitive to, is paramount. It's really the foundational level of a Bitcoin mining operation is understanding the servers that you're running, how they work, how to operate them. And what I've really enjoyed is the advancements on firmware over the years. I played with some early firmwares, and now we've got these institutional products like LuxOS and Brains and the features that they're implementing at the ASIC level are giving you a lot more control over your operation. 3-4 years ago, you were very at the mercy of your ambient temperature. Now we have things like advanced thermal management, where you can actually control how your ASIC is reacting to your ambient temperature at the firmware level. So I think developments like that and being up to speed on everything that's happening at the ASIC level will give you an edge in your Bitcoin mining operations.
Is Giga providing, of course, I mean, you guys are providing transformers, pad mounts, switch gears, all of that good stuff, containers is what I think you are most famous for. Do you think it's ever going to be a bilateral relationship between the ASICs and the containers? Meaning, do you think the ASICs will ever take commands that the container is giving them instead of just saying, look, this is the ASIC, it's performing this way, this is the amount of heat that comes out, so now we're going to spin the fans of the container faster or slower. Do you know what I mean? I mean, that's a one-way relationship.
That's right.
Do you think it's ever going to be bilateral? Do you think that's
absolutely
going to be the future?
And I think there will be an AI component in the middle of that. So, you know, imagine if your whole system from your ASIC to your container was all smart. It's constantly monitoring your temperatures, inlet, outlet temperatures. It's communicating that with the ASIC, and it's optimizing at a frequency and voltage level. I think we're headed there, and I think there's going to be some really cool developments coming across that space.
In your role, enterprise account manager, explain that to the viewers and audience. I mean, we've all heard that term before, but what does that actually mean in your day-to-day job? What do you get up to?
Yeah, great question. It's a fancy word for salesman that's focused on key accounts. So, you know, I'm after the deals with the big dollar signs on them. I'm working with the enterprise level clients in the space. So what does that mean? Mostly institutional folks, a lot of the pubcos, stuff like that. So, my goal is to come in here, you leverage my relationships and my knowledge from my previous history in the space, and really get Giga's name further out there into the space and close high value deals. That's my job.
Before you came, what do you think the weaknesses were that Giga had in that respect?
Sure. They're some young guys, and our leadership, you know, they're college buddies, and they have an amazing story. And one thing that I thought, you know, where I could add value was just bringing a little maturity and, you know, wisdom to the group and keeping things kind of level headed. I've seen it all. I've been through, you know, several cycles. And so I know sometimes it's better just to take things a little slower, but these guys are phenomenal. They know what they're doing. They really value my opinion when I do have some input. So that makes me feel good as an employee. You know, you're valued, and they come to me with questions. Hey, how do you think we should approach this? So it's an amazing team. And I actually had the opportunity to go over to China and see some of our supply chain, and what these guys have built out in the last 5 years is absolutely mind-blowing, extremely impressive. So their supply chain is very robust.
Without giving away any of your secrets, right? But when you negotiate high capex, fast-moving ASIC deals, I would imagine the infrastructure side of things moves a bit slower. But what would you say are sort of the most three important factors when it comes to negotiating deals that have so high dollar values on them? Is it patience? Is it response times? Is it professional level of communication? Does the method of communication even matter? Like, how do these deals take place? And what do you look out for to make sure that, you know, even before you get in touch, you have the best chances of a successful outcome?
Sure. So this industry is extremely relationship based. That's what I've found to be very important. So knowing who you're talking to, knowing where they come from, how they operate is extremely important, and having that relationship in place. You know, to get some of these deals across the finish line, responsiveness is absolutely top priority. You know, when they call, you better be there to pick up the phone. That's how it works from an account management perspective. So you want to be their guy. You know, when they have a question about something, I'm going to call Colin. I bet he's got, you know, some ideas around this. That, and then bringing creativity to the deal structure. So, you know, if sometimes they're pushing back on price, well, see where else you can improve the deal. What kind of levers can you pull to, you know, sweeten the deal for them? Is it, can I increase my lead time? Can I maybe get it on a boat quicker than they were expecting? Can I help send a couple of extra engineers to help at energization? There's certain different levels you can kind of pull to bring that creativity into these big deals to get the job done. A lot of the times, you know, price is a big factor. Sure, everybody wants a competitive price, but what they really want is after sales support, customer success, and doing what you say you're going to do, meeting your milestones, you know, getting your equipment delivered on time. That's what shows these big players like, okay, these guys know what they're doing, and they're doing it right.
This episode is sponsored by Hashbranch, the easiest way to mine Bitcoin in the US. Sourcing hardware and rack space usually is a mess. Bad deal structures, misaligned incentives, and no visibility after deployment. I have placed tens of thousands of ASICs in partnership with Hashbranch. What I like most is that they cut through the noise. Fair pricing, aligned terms, and access to hosting that actually works. Use code HASHRATEUP100, visit hashbranch.com today to get $100 off of each miner that you order.
Okay. Tons of follow-up questions here.
Sure.
You already talked about the after-sales factors, lead times, technicians, execution. Who are the most important public customers that Giga has today?
Sure. So, I mean, you name it. I could throw out any name across the PubCo board, but I don't want to, you know, throw specific names out there, but we're probably working with them. You know, just to mention a few notable projects, we've done Marathon's containers for their off-grid site in North Dakota. We did the Giga Hydro system for them in Finland, doing their heat reuse program. So they're heating 11,000 homes and district heating off of Giga Hydro cooled systems. So there's a few big names out there. We work with all of them. Really, you know, love to do the big deals.
And why do you think it is that Giga has such a top in class brand? Like, what do you think are the most important factors that you know, anybody who knows the mining industry knows Giga, first of all, right? So we've all come across the name, and then you immediately associate it with high quality products. Is it just that, or is there another reason that, you know, everybody associates Giga with the high quality containers?
Sure. Yeah, there's another reason. And the biggest reason is we operate our own gear. We're Bitcoin miners. That's how these guys started out. They were off-grid Bitcoin miners starting out in 2018. Some of the first guys to really get some, you know, scalable behind the meter flare gas plays online, and they gained a lot of traction, went kind of viral across social media in the early days, and that's where they got their name out. And they started building all their own stuff. They were like, hey, how can we cut down CapEx? Oh, I can refurbish my own gen sets. I can build my own ASIC mining containers. So that's where it started out. And now we've carried that operational expertise and we've scaled it up to institutional grade products. And now Giga, so we have pivoted away from the off-grid stuff. We've found it's much easier to scale and just go grab megawatts from the grid rather than trying to, you know, be power generation and data center. So now we're doing 20 megawatt, 50 megawatt internal projects where we're going grabbing real estate, we're grabbing power, and we're building it out with Giga infrastructure. And we got a couple of options. You can fill up the containers with ASICs, do some hosting, turn it into a cash flowing asset, or you can turn around and sell a turnkey site. And there's massive demand for turnkey ready to mine Bitcoin mining sites that are institutional grade quality. So, you know, if you can bring those kind of assets to the market, there's going to be deep demand for that. And we've seen that in the past where, you know, we've gotten, we were selling a turnkey site and there's literal bidding wars going on across multiple big players in the space that wants your site. So I think the guys figured out early on that, hey, you know, the real estate and the power, those are the real assets you want to hold. And that's worked out really, really well for them.
Yeah, I've heard that before from somebody who was on the show not too long ago, that the real asset is having immediate infrastructure available because everybody wants power now. You know, nobody seems to plan ahead 8 months. Everybody just says, okay, we have money now. Now we want to put it somewhere. Do you have a site? And it's mostly new entrants into the market who make that mistake. of paying high premiums for stuff that's online now, or you know, there might be in another bind. The most important after sales question you get, Colin, what is that?
Yeah. After sales question, I would say it's typically around something with the air-cooled fans. So not a lot of people know how to operate a VFD, isolate a breaker, if there maybe is some kind of failure at the motor level. But when you're talking about air-cooled boxes, so your mission critical items are your switchboard. That's where your power comes in, powers the entire box. Right after that is your fans. If your fans fail, your box is going to heat up, your miners are going to overheat, you're going to lose hash rate. So knowing your way around a VFD and learning how to operate these fans, isolate a breaker if there's some kind of failure, that's probably the biggest one. And that's where Giga really shines. You know, we're starting to get tons of equipment. I mean, we've got over 500 megawatts of air-cooled boxes out in the field right now across internal projects and our external clients. We're on track to have a gigawatt of gear out in the field. How do you support a gigawatt of gear out in the field? Well, you have to have real depth in your after sales and customer success team. So that's what we've been focused on. We've hired over 26 employees in the last quarter. So we're scaling incredibly fast. We brought in this woman named Sophia. She's a former, you know, kind of Ivy League girl, and she's running our after sales. She is phenomenal. She's based out in LA, and the team that she's built out is incredible. These guys are engineers, they're technicians, they know how our equipment works, and they can get out to you quick. So that's really what separates us from all these other competitors is one, we have warranty across all of our products. So if something does fail, well, this is where we stand out. We carry all the mission critical items as spare parts in our warehouses in the U.S. That means if we're talking hydro, on a hydro box, your most mission critical items are your pumps. If your pump goes down, you're not, that fluid's not moving, you're not hashing. Carrying things like that as spare parts, backup, ready to go in the US for quick deployment to get people back online, really is where we shine. You know, when we're talking about after sales support for some of these competitors, talking about mostly the Chinese brands, you know, their after sales support is a WeChat. And, you know, a couple of engineers that might give you a call from Asia with a 13-hour time difference. And, you need spare pumps? Good luck, man. 3 to 6 months, you know? So this is where we separate ourselves from the competition. We have the team that will back up our product. We stand behind what we make, and we have spare parts in the U.S. to make things right when something breaks.
What? I mean, you already are hinting at the most crucial mistakes people make when planning and buying these boxes. Is there anything else that people miss when they look at the price of a container, and it might be 200% more versus a box from Asia, besides the fact that you can actually keep it running smoothly without huge delays?
That's it, man. So, you know, as Bitcoin miners, we strive to be the lowest cost operator, and that can get you in trouble when it comes to equipment selection. A lot of people don't have the foresight to see that, hey, if I want my Bitcoin mine to operate smoothly for longer than 2 years or a year, I may need to spend a little extra capex to get a quality infrastructure. And now we're starting to see people come around. It takes one horror story and then you're buying gigaboxes. It takes one guy standing up a few amp boxes and going, oh my God, I'm never doing this again. I should have spent the extra 50 grand and got the gigabox. And that's what a lot of the institutional players have figured out as well. They spend tons of time and resources going out, designing, manufacturing their own infrastructure, only to get out into the field and realize, oh, we may have missed something, or maybe our design, it doesn't work well in this specific ambient environment. Whereas, you know, we've been building boxes since 2018. We own and operate our own Bitcoin mining sites. We know what it takes to operate in different environments. And we build the highest quality product in the space. Well, that comes along with the price tag. And all it takes is one horror story of setting up some AMP boxes or some of these other boxes in the space to quickly realize, hey, I can just hit the easy button and order boxes from Giga and not have to worry about the headache of all these other things.
Yeah, it goes to efficiency as well, right? I mean, how many conversations have I had with clients that want to buy machines from the largest manufacturer out there and tell me, oh, but is this more efficient? And then I have to explain to them, yes, but over a two-year time frame, what it says on paper doesn't really matter. What matters is the operational efficiency and how long these machines actually ran. You know, if I have to touch this machine 20 times over a 20-year, two-year time span versus touching a machine from a different manufacturer two times, then you tell me what's more efficient, right? That's especially it. If there's a warranty and if there's no additional cost or low additional cost when it comes to repairing these machines. Do you offer extended warranties as well? What do your warranties look like?
Yeah, so our air boxes and hydro product come with a one-year warranty. Happy to talk about some creative solutions around extended warranty. We're flexible there. And then transformers, same thing. And yeah, as far as air-cooled boxes, really the only thing you see break on those is, you know, probably a fan motor, and those are easily swappable. We've never had really any issues with our switchgear, our mains. PDUs are great, super high quality. Haven't had many failures there. Yeah. Most of the time it's, just a bad fan motor, and those are quick to swap out. Now hydro, that's a whole nother beast. You know, you got a lot of other complex systems there. You've got fluids, you've got pumps, you've got, you know, everything. So you're dealing with pressure and a lot of other items. But the evolution of our hydro product is super impressive. Where we've come from kind of version one to where we are now is a massive improvement. And really happy to start seeing more and more of our hydro products getting out into the field.
Do you think that's where the trend is going, hydro? People buying, understanding that they're more efficient machines, longer lasting, not many moving parts in the machines themselves.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I have some thoughts here. So when we talk about, there's a big conversation around form factor of miners in the space. When are we going to get standardization? It'd make our lives easier. You know, we have to make three different versions of racks and spacing just to accommodate Bitcoin miners, from S19 to S21 Pro. They're about 2 inches taller, 2 inches wider. So there's lots of chatter about, hey, how do we get this form factors standardized? The only place I'm really seeing that happen is in the hydro space. And it's with the 2U server rack style hydro miners. It seems to be that a lot of these companies that are either emerging ASIC manufacturers have come to their senses and said, hey, let's stick with this 2U. So you're seeing it from everybody, from What's Miner was kind of the first one out there with the What's Miner 2U hydros. Now you've got those in the latest M63S++, et cetera. RUDyne, they're building hydro miners, 2U server style. Bitdeer Seal Miner, they're hydro. 2U. We're even starting to see this across the altcoin miners, AlphaPex, you know, Volk Miner. They're building script miners in 2U hydro form factor. So that's where
it means latest as well, right?
Okay, so no, the S23 hydro shoebox. I don't know when these guys are going to catch on. I don't know what they're thinking. They do have some server stack style ASICs. They have a 3U. So we'll see if they get down to that 2U. form factor. But so, yeah, that tells me, okay, you're seeing form factor standardization. Not only that, when you break it down and you look at the numbers, compare hash rate and efficiency gains across hydro iterations to immersion iterations. So let's take the Esh21 XP immersion, for example. That's a 300 terahash machine at 13.5 joules per T. If you look at the same, if you look at the Esh21 XP Hydro, you're at 473 terahash at 12 joules. So not only are you outpacing on overall hash rate, but your efficiency is better on the hydros. Why is that happening? Well, I think it's because, personally, I think the hydro offers superior cooling mechanics. Now, you know, probably get some pushback on that here, but you go talk to any operator in the field. This is where I get the best feedback. Go talk to the guys that are out in the field that put their hands on this equipment every single day. They'll tell you all their woes of air-cooled immersion hydro. And the sentiment that I get from guys that are operating large-scale immersion facilities is it's a nightmare. Anytime I have to perform any kind of ASIC maintenance on a machine, I have to pull it out. I have to hang the ASIC. I have to drain it out, let all this fluid come out. I talked to a guy he's a one operator for a 2 megawatt site out in rural Texas. It's immersion, super small site. He's out there doing some maintenance, slips on immersion fluid that had spilled out of the tank and bumps his head. Dude was laying on the ground thinking, oh my God, I'm going to die out here, man. There's nobody around for miles. So it's just little operational things like that, that, you know, tell me that maybe this isn't the most efficient way to go about things. And not only that, the optics of the hydro server racks is so sexy. Investors love it. It's pleasing to the eye. It's something they can wrap their head around. It looks like a traditional data center. You walk in there, you see server racks. You're like, okay, this makes sense to me. Whereas immersion is kind of like, it's a little hard to wrap your head around. What do you mean? I'm dumping these high-grade electronics into this oil completely submerged. So, you know, this is my personal opinion and my experience. But if you look at the market and who's dumping the money into ASIC developments, I mean, look at Bitdeer for example. They've got air-cooled and hydro, no immersion. And you see that across the some other places in the space. So that's just my take.
HashRedUp is sponsored by solomining.de, the place to buy open source home and solo mining devices like the BitX. With about 20 watts of usage, these solo mining devices are perfect to play the lottery from home or from the office. Get 5% off with the code HashRedUp. Thanks to the legends at solomining.de for sponsoring the content.
No, it's fair. I mean, is there a difference in the cooling mechanics on the pump and dry cooler level when it comes to immersion and hydro? Is it the same thing, just a heat plate, and then you just get rid of the heat?
That's it. It's the same thing, right? It's basically external air cooling. Like, all you're doing is taking fluid, you're running it across the chips, that's picking up your heat, and then it's piped out to a radiator, which is a dry cooler. It's a bunch of coils, and it's basically the air and the fans is cooling that fluid to put it back into your system on your cold line.
If you're breaking it down, you know, I'm not an engineer, but I just spoke to Harris Bassett, CTO at Bitdeer, on the show as well. And
awesome.
He was talking about how air cooled can get you to the same efficiency as liquid cooled or immersion or hydro cooled. But I'm not sure, you know, if you see these numbers, is it just maybe more efficient to offload the same amount of heat with hydro and immersion? I have no idea, but it'd be interesting to understand where the market is moving. And so, as you hinted, like, there's definitely signs already. What I might add here is we don't know, like, if we get to the 5 joule per T era and these chips in form factor get smaller and smaller and smaller, they might change how they, you know, work from a thermal standpoint. And then one, again, one solution might win out over the other. Because, you know, why does immersion exist at all if hydro has all the advantages?
Sure. You know, I think it's just emerging technologies. People want to give it a try. It's the new sexy thing, right? But I think there's advantages across both. And this is my entire thesis, is build your Bitcoin mine according to your operating environment. So analyze everything from the soil you're sitting down on to the ambient temperature, humidity levels. This will give you insight of what kind of equipment to deploy. It's not a one size fits all kind of thing. For instance, if you're trying to stand up a Bitcoin mine in Houston, Texas, where we have humidity rates that are well over 80% for a lot of the year, you know, that should raise a red flag. Okay, if I go air cooled, I'm going to have tons of corrosion issues down the line from all of this humidity going into my miners. We've seen it time and time again across different places in Texas. So that right there, that should pivot you to alternative cooling. Then you can go to the decision making table of, okay, do I want immersion or do I want hydro? And that'll probably vary from group to group and how much funding you have and the CapEx considerations. But at the end of the day, hydro and immersion CapEx are pretty similar.
Why do you think, going back to the standardization thing, what benefit do manufacturers have in standardizing their own equipment, right? We see one famous player not doing that. And my thinking here is, okay, if all of this infrastructure out there exists that fits Bitmain machines, right, but not any of the other machines, now you've got a kind of an advantage because the owners of this infrastructure are kind of forced to buy your equipment if you're the only one left, you know, building shoebox equipment, right? So what benefit do you think would Bitmain actually have to say, okay, no, we're gonna do the same thing as a competition and just build 2U infrastructure or 2U ASICs from now on?
Well, I think the biggest benefit would be customer satisfaction, like being happy about it, because you don't want to have your clients going out and having to build specialized infrastructure just to support your machines. They would rather build something that, hey, maybe if I want to swap some different miners in down the line, I can do that very easily. Also, Bitmain is not taking into consideration that when they do release these form factor changes, that the entire industry behind them, the whole picks and shovels side of the deal, so Giga Energy included, has to iterate on our designs to accommodate. When they changed the form factor from S19 to S21 Pro, they did zero press release. Nobody saw it coming. It was just like, hey, surprise, here's our new miner. By the way, none of the racks you have set up will fit for it. And one more thing, we're putting a new plug on there that you've never seen. So, you know, it's things like this where there's no communication with the end user. There's no preparation that I think just leaves a bad taste in people's mouth. And I welcome these other manufacturers stepping in and really listening to customer feedback and saying, hey, these guys want a 2U form factor. They want a standardized ASIC model. Let's give it to them. Why do we have to be difficult?
Yeah, no, I hear you. Bitmain hasn't shown the greatest signs that, you know, their customer or their after sales is front and center, let's just say. I mean, it's in line with their support offerings. You know, I cannot offer any of my clients that have low volume of machines to buy Bitmain machines, because I know if they fail, their warranty is not worth a lot. You know, yeah, cool, they're under warranty, but you know, if they're not being fixed, that doesn't mean much. And if, again, to what you said earlier, if you only getting a reply with a 13-hour time difference, maybe a week later, that doesn't help, right?
That's right.
Most important, like, give me a box to it, Colin. I'm very sad that next time we have to do this, next time you have a container like in Vegas, I want you to give me the box to it. But give me the highlights. Like, when you walk through these boxes, First of all, describe what the boxes come from, because I think some listeners might misunderstand what it means to buy a mining container as well. Like, what is in there? What comes with the box? And then tell me like the most important highlights that you show customers when you walk through them.
Absolutely. So, if you come by the Giga booth at Mining Disrupt or BTC 2025 in Vegas, you're going to see one of our big 40-foot Bitcoin mining containers out there. These are mobile data centers. You can slap them down at the source of power, wherever you want, hook a Starlink up to them and mine in rural Texas all the way to Africa, wherever you want. So when I give a box tour, I always start off where the magic happens, at the switchboard. So we have an integrated switchboard. What's a switchboard? It's a big electrical panel. It's where you feed the electricity into the box that distributes it throughout the box to all your components. So our boxes take three phase 415 volt that will step down to 240 volts at the plug of the PDU, which all the miners like. We do offer 480 volt down to 277. So if you're running like maybe some Canon miners or even the latest Bitmain S21 series comes with 220 to 277 volt PSU. So either way, we build both of those models. So I start off at the integrated switchboard. You got a 2000 amp main breaker. That's what feeds your whole box. Distribute to 125 amp feeder breakers. So each one of those 125 amp feeder breakers feeds a PDU that you will see inside the box. So about 24 miners per 125 amp breaker. So then I walk people around to the cold air intake side and I show them our filtration system. So we've got two sets of filters, a G1 filter on the outside, which is basically just a large like mesh screen. What that does is it catches all kinds of heavy debris. So leaves, grass, somebody's, cutting the grass, and that'll all get caught up there. Any kind of plastic bags flowing around, that'll keep all the heavy debris you don't want inside. Then we walk around and you step inside of the front door of the container and you see the racks all the way down. And you look over and you just see this massive wall of 4-inch thick G2 filters. So we use a MERV 4. So what's MERV rating, right? It's just like how much airflow allows through there. The higher the MERV rating, the more dense the pleat is, which can be airflow restricting. ASICs are extremely miner hungry, so we use a MERV 4 filter. We found this allows for the most optimal airflow into your ASIC. So you've got a massive wall. There's 76 of these 4-inch MERV 4 filters across the front of this 40-foot container on the interior wall. This is going to grab all your dust particles. It can pick up a little bit of moisture, but mostly keeping all those big dusty particles out of your miners. So that'll keep your miners happy on the inside. Then as we're walking down the hall of the container, you'll see on the left all your racking. So cool thing about our containers, everything from a power distribution and network comes pre-wired. What does that mean? Plug and play, baby. You slide in your miner, you put your Ethernet cord in, you plug your power cord from your miner to your PDU, and you're off to the races. Something that really sets us apart is cable management. It's the small things, man. It's the attention to detail. We have very little exposed cabling. Everything looks super clean cut, compact, tight, very meaningful. It has purpose. All of our designs are like that, and that's really what sets us apart. And then, so you walk all the way down to the end of the hall and you've got the operator station. So like I mentioned earlier in the podcast, we're Bitcoin miners. We own and operate these things. We're out in the field. So we've incorporated an entire desk for the operations techs. So you've got a fold down laptop holder. You've got a small mini computer PC, and then you've got an HMI, human machine interface. And this is where your technicians can interact with the entire container. They can monitor the VFDs, look at your fan frequencies. You can monitor your temperature sensors so you can see the temperature coming in on the cold side through your cold aisle. And you can also see the temperatures on the backside going through your exhaust. So That's and then the last thing I'll hit on is the fans. So I mentioned earlier on that like your fans are your most mission critical item behind your switchboard of an air cooled container. We've spent a lot of time, money, and R&D finding fans that are reliable, durable, and also just badass and work really well. These things are made to grab heat and move them out of the box as quickly as possible. So really happy with where we've ended up in our latest iterations of the fan motors. You're muted.
Oh, my mistake. The HMI, the
human machine interface.
Is that a screen? Is that a computer? What is that?
That's exactly right. It's a touch screen, and that'll give you access to, like I mentioned, all those temperature sensors, also the VFD control for your fans. So hot day, you need some extra cooling, you crank it up. If it's a nice cool day in the winter, you can crank down your fans, save on some energy costs.
Are you still selling your hard-mined Bitcoin for expenses like mining hardware, electricity bills, and tax invoices? With Firefish, you can access liquidity in fiat or stablecoins without selling your Bitcoin. Firefish is a peer-to-peer marketplace for non-custodial Bitcoin-backed loans. No credit checks and no monthly payments. Sign up on Firefish today, create a loan request, deposit BTC into a multisig, get funded by an investor, and repay at the end of the term. Collateral is always at least 2x the loan. So if BTC drops by 50%, you may be liquidated. So be sure at any time to top up the collateral as needed. Thanks to the legends at Firefish for sponsoring the show. Use HashRateUp for a 30% discount on the fees and get your first Bitcoin-backed loan today.
Okay, so hypothetical example, right? There is a competition out there. Competition is big in this space. Competitor comes up with an iteration of a container that has the same quality standards, it's the same badass product that you just described, right? Offers the same hardware, same solutions. Where do you guys cut cost to get the price down? Like, where do you think you have room to improve the cost structure of the container on your side and make that more efficient? Sure. Is it the manufacturing in Asia? Is it labor costs? Is it more efficient repairs? Like, where do you become more efficient as a company to be able to reduce pricing?
Yes, great question. So there's a couple different levels we can pull here. One is just getting cheaper on the breakers. So the majority of your manufacturing cost for your mining containers is that switchboard. It's all the breakers. I would say that's probably makes up about 50%, maybe 60% of the entire value of the container.
Wow.
So 2,000, yeah, I mean, a 2,000 amp main breaker, that's several grand and some lead time just in that one component. So that's one place we can pull levers. So maybe you're out in Paraguay, you don't need to be UL certified, you know, you don't need all these US kind of regulation stuff. You can go cheaper on the breakers. That's one place we can pull a lever and get you there. You really don't want to sacrifice on fan quality. I mean, I've hit on this multiple times. That's mission critical. You want to be able to grab that heat and move it. You can get basic PDUs. You can, you know, go no VFD. So there's a couple of different levels we can pull to get more competitive on pricing. But at the end of the day, it's like, we don't want to sacrifice that. We know that, like, okay, yeah, we got the biggest price tag, but you also are getting the best quality. You're getting the best service in the space. We want to stand on that. And we want to build on that. So, of course, you know, as this space evolves and it becomes more competitive, we can adjust, we can pivot quickly. No problem there.
You see, I have so many more questions, but we're running out of time. So let's keep it brief. Do you see any important developments in the container hardware space that are going to further improve the box? Like, what is the most important? Because it's all pretty standardized products, right? It's fans, filters, it's, you know, networking. All of this stuff has existed. So how much space is there for innovation in those parts?
There's tons of innovation at the operational level, and we kind of hinted at this earlier on. We're talking about that AI layer that will help you communicate bilaterally across your box and ASIC. I think there's massive room for innovation there. There's also room for innovation around form factor and being able to fit multiple types of ASICs in your container. So we'll talk about like adjustable shelf spacing, adjustable heat shrouds on the back that create the seal between the cold and the hot aisle. I think we'll see some really cool, interesting things happening.
Do you think we're going to see mixed boxes, hydro and air cooled, or does that all make sense?
Ooh, probably not. Just because hydro, you need your cooling distribution unit. That takes up a bunch of space. That's all your pumps and compressors and feed tanks and stuff like that. And then you need the dry cooler part of it too, which is pretty bulky. Is there room in the space for a hybrid model? Sure. I think, that'd be a cool little Frankenstein project to build on. But is it something you're going to see out at every site? Probably not.
All right. Last but not least, Colin, I work to bring more hash rate to Africa, right? Famously, the Gridless guys and Gamma have open sourced a plan for a very basic container. Do you think that's something that Giga would consider doing, like open sourcing very basic plans for a very basic air-cooled mining container that I could send, where I could send the CAD files to a local manufacturer here to build it for me?
Sure. I think there's some value there, and I think we're definitely open to something like that. You're having a great design is one thing, but having the engineers to build it and build it in a quality manner is a whole different story. And we've been down that road. We've been. This is how I kind of explained it to me. In the early days, our factory out in China was just like in the middle of nowhere in the woods kind of thing. Now our latest factories, it's like upgrading to a Tesla factory, man. There's automation, extreme large scale capacity. So, and you can see the quality difference between our earlier products and our latest iterations very clearly just by the manufacturing partners that you're using.
Give yourself another 20 seconds to show Giga where people should go from now and to learn more.
Absolutely. So gigaenergy.com, we've got some really cool tools on there. We've got quote builders for transformers, air boxes, hydros. So you can go in there and check some prices. I get a notification on the back end that's, hey, so-and-so just built a quote. So you'll probably hear from me. I'll pick up the phone and call you. Hey, man, you want to buy a box? LinkedIn is a great place to grab me. So LinkedIn / Colin. Kelly.btc. You can find me there. That's an easy way to get a hold of me. And then on Telegram at Colin_Giga. Always on TG, like most of us in the space. So feel free to reach out. Would love to connect with more Bitcoin miners in the space.
Where would we be without Telegram?
I don't
500 exahash. Colin, probably. This was amazing. Thank you so much for your time and for your expertise. I definitely learned a lot. Have a great day. It's early start of the day for you where you are, I'm sure, so you have the rest of it ahead of you. Thank you so much for your time.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me on, Jesse. I look forward to making another appearance here in the future, man.
Absolutely. Cheers, man. Thank you.
All right. Cheers.